It's that time again, the bi-weekly segment, Pulse of the Hawks with Mookie Alexander joining us again. Mookie's going to come in here in a couple of minutes. A bit of a Super Bowl hangover maybe for some people here. It's, you know, you witnessed the Eagles just dominate the Chiefs yesterday. And you know, if you appreciate defense and the way they were doing it with the four-man front, it was impressive. And, you know, we're going to get into the Super Bowl. We're going to touch on that with Mookie. Just his thoughts on the game overall. And then we're going to kind of see how, you know, the Seahawks maybe can take a few notes from that and how maybe we can start, you know, looking at how to build our team. And man, because the Eagles just seem to keep doing it right now in the NFC. They're a competitive team. So we're going to get into all that. And we're going to get into a few other things. Big cap restructure. We're going to talk about that, what that all means for the Seahawks. And we got to touch on Geno Smith as well and take a look at some of that that's going on too. We're going to touch on that with Mookie and a few coaches that are out this door as well and get his thoughts on maybe possible replacements, maybe some promotions, a lot of stuff. Your Q&As as well, guys. Flood the comment section, super chats, priority. So get those in as well. And guys, if you have been watching and you haven't subbed yet, go down, hit the sub button for us, share the videos, like the videos, all helps out the channel. So on the other side, Mookie Alexander.
So y'all can sit here and ask me all the questions y'all want to.
Don't you ever talk about me!
Yeah, let's go. It's go time, baby.
Gino steps up, takes that shot to the end zone. It is Metcalf.
I'm just about that action, boss.
You about to go get it. You just like to do it.
That's what it is.
Off me.
Somebody in the world is
here. Are you kidding me?
This is the Hawk Zone Rundown with your hosts, Ryan and Bryce.
Welcome back to the Hawk Zone Rundown. Back with us again for the bi-weekly segment, Pulse of the Hawks. Mookie Alexander. Mookie, what's going on, man? We are coming at everybody a day after the Super Bowl, dominant performance by the Eagles. Yeah, man, what'd you think overall with the game? If you're an Eagles fan, you're loving it. A lot of people thought, you know, it wasn't much of a game, but if you appreciate defense, man, it was pretty dominant, man. But what was your feeling?
My feeling was a little bit of deja vu. Now, the Chiefs were not the 2013 Broncos, but the flow of that game sure felt a lot like Super Bowl 48 on multiple fronts. You had the pick six that kind of made the game pretty much out of reach for the Chiefs. You had Saquon Barkley not being much of a factor in the same game. Marshawn Lynch was not a factor other than the one-yard run in the second quarter, whichever quarter it was that Seattle got their first offensive touchdown. He had an efficient performance by the quarterback. It just said Hurts got an MVP and Wilson didn't. And you just had swarming defense without blitzing a whole lot. I mean, the front four dominated Kansas City. Now, 2 years ago, we had this matchup and Jalen Carter wasn't part of it, but many of those other Eagles players were, and they could not get Mahomes on the ground. In this instance, they got six sacks, most he's ever taken, and they were covering those Chiefs receivers down the field, other than Xavier Worthy for what was effectively garbage time, which was the entire second half. That was a virtuoso showing, and good for Vic Fangio. He used to be a rival of ours when he was San Francisco's defensive coordinator, and he's finally got his ring, and he did it with his hometown team. But yes, the Eagles, and we said this off-air, I had the feeling that if the Chiefs didn't win close, the Eagles were just going to absolutely smash them. But I didn't think it would be this level of smashing, like 34-0. That was going to be heavy. I was genuinely wondering if the Chiefs were going to get shut out. And they didn't, so they got to make the stat line a little bit prettier. But isn't it amazing that even the absolute best quarterbacks, ones who are in GOAT debates, they can look mortal when the pass rush is getting home all the time and they don't have open receivers to throw to. They don't have safety valves and they are in constant drop back situations because they also don't have a running game.
Yeah, Mookie. You know, when I was watching that, I honestly thought Ryan Grubb became the OC for the Kansas City Chiefs and nobody knew about it. Like three rushing attempts in the first half. Like, honestly, I was sitting there going, okay, so is Andy Reid secretly being controlled by Ryan Grubb? Because this seems like a Ryan Grubb game plan right now. We all witnessed it for, you know, seasons or this season for sure. The thing that kind of was shocking to me, I guess, was you saw a team in the Eagles when you construct it correctly. And we're talking about it, and you know, we've talked about it with Michael Thompson on our previous show, but like lessons the Seahawks can take from this Super Bowl are you have to build correctly in the trenches. And it's not just about throwing resources at it. It's being very, very diligent and detailed in what you throw those assets at when it comes to how do we draft, how do we acquire talent in free agency. You know, you look at Mekhi Becton, for example. Like, Seattle could have got Mekhi Becton. Now, would they have had the foresight to put him inside and see that, you know, he could make it as a guard? Probably not. They probably would have played him at right tackle, and then, you know, Abe Lucas would have came back, and he may not have been on the offensive line for, you know, the rest of the season. But it's one of those things for me where I look at, you know, what Howie Roseman's been able to do with the Eagles and, you know, build a run game, get weapons on the outside. They're probably the least effective area on the Eagles' offense, I should say, at least, is their tight end room. That's the least amount of, like, talent they probably got outside of Goddard. You don't really know who the other tight ends are, but you got Barkley. And then you plug in a quarterback who I think we can all agree is not a top five, maybe not even a top 10 quarterback in the NFL, and you ask him to manage the game. You give him easy answers to the quiz of what is the Chiefs defense. And all we heard leading up to this game was Spagnuolo is going to, you know, show so many pressure looks and look how he confused Josh Allen. That's great. But if you have a play caller that understands what his quarterback strengths and weaknesses are and puts him in those situations where he's going to be successful, you get what Jalen Hurts did, which was, what was it, 17 of 22 for like 205 and, you know, a passing touchdown, a rushing touchdown. Like, that's winning football. It may not be pretty, but when you get it going and you complement it with an elite defense like the Eagles had, you get the blowout, which is a very similar recipe to what we had with the Seahawks when they won their first Super Bowl.
Yeah, and you want to know what's different? And this is very relevant given all of our salary cap wannabes, including us. They've paid Jalen Hurts. They've paid A.J. Brown. They traded for A.J. Brown and then paid him and then extended him. They've paid Devontae Smith. They've paid Goddard, although I think he's coming up at the end of his contract pretty soon. He's up there in age. They've paid Lane Johnson. They've paid Landon Dickerson. Juergens, I think, is still on his rookie deal. And they've paid Mailata. That, and, of course, they've got Barkley's contract, and it's looking like a bargain right now. That's a pretty expensive offense. Maybe the, and doesn't this go back to Holmgren's comments about as far as drafting defense versus drafting offense? A lot of that defense, mm-hmm. and then probably different next year because who knows if they're going to re-sign Zach Bond, but still, cheap defense. I mean, Jalen Carter still on his rookie deal. Jordan Davis still on his rookie deal. I mean, Josh Sweat was a good, very good signing. Bryce Huff was a splash signing for them, and he was a healthy scratch in the Super Bowl because he'd been ineffective. That's how good this Eagles defense is without him. Like Zach Bond, dirt cheap signing. They brought back Gardner Johnson. Doesn't cost a whole lot. They've got Cooper DeJean. And Cooper DeJean had the big pick six, and he absolutely looks like somebody Mike McDonald would have loved to have in Seattle. I mean, DeJean and Witherspoon on the same team would have been just chaos in the most encouraging, complimentary way. But it's very good roster building. In fact, the Eagles have been, to me, even though they're easily the butt of jokes because of their fan base and how quick they are to fire any coach or bench any quarterback, for the last 25 years, they have been hugely successful in terms of wins, in terms of playoff appearances, in terms of deep playoff runs. They've been to 8 NFC championship games. They've been to four Super Bowls, this century with 3 different head coaches and 3 different quarterbacks. And they've been able to win too. So now that they can no longer be mocked for never having a Super Bowl, they've got 2 in the span of 7 years. But if we go more recently, meaning the full Super Bowl and this Super Bowl, the common theme, they win in the trenches. I mean, Nick Foles behind a subpar offensive line, the Patriots would have won by blowout. But he was hardly touched in that game, from what I recall. Jalen Hurts, Spags had to blitz out of desperation. Chris Jones was not 100%. He obviously left the game early. But without blitzing, Hurts had forever in the pocket. And it does remind me a bit, I have to use the Seattle-Denver Super Bowl again because it often gets forgotten, even fully acknowledging Von Miller didn't play in that game. That was one of the few times, if not the only time all season, that the Seahawks, who had the most expensive line in the league, had everybody available. Okung played, Unger played, Carpenter played, two of the other two, Asuizi and Giacomini. No sacks allowed. Wilson was very rarely under pressure. That's the kind of offensive line that you need. And then on the defensive side of the ball, if you can dominate without blitzing, I mean, you're golden. And not every team can do that to Kansas City, of course, but Seattle has had that formula. It's not necessarily a lesson they have to learn. It's pulling back from lessons that they used to give out to other teams as far as how to build a roster. Now, we know the offensive line has been a different story for them because they've had a lot of bad offensive lines over the years, but the defensive line was such an underrated part of Seattle's Super Bowl run, and they're getting there on that front, but that offensive line bit, I mean, it's hard to say Seattle is that close to being a contender when you see the vast disparity in how the Eagles' offensive line performs and how every Seahawks offensive line has performed over the last 15 to 16 years or even longer than that.
Well, it's interesting, too, because when you look at, you know, when I was watching that game after the first quarter, there were a lot of similarities for me just watching how both defenses were playing. And, you know, when we went into that game against the Broncos sold out to stop Marshawn. That was their whole objective in that game. And it left them in a lot of man coverage situations with Doug Baldwin and Golden Tate. And this receiving corps took advantage of. What did the Chiefs do? We're going to sell out to stop Saquon and leave McDuffie and a bunch of these guys in one-on-one situations on the outside with Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown. And Jalen Hurts made them pay every time that they did that. So you look at just the similarities between the two games, and now you look at where these two franchises are, it's a vast difference in construction of roster. Like Seattle, yes, they, you know, have paid skill position players very much like the Eagles have. But the Eagles have also been able to risk it and go after high-priced free agents because they know the impact they will have. And they're calculated with it. They don't just go spending their money like crazy, but they will go and spend it. Like, for me, for Seattle to have an offseason that would be similar to what an Eagles offseason would look like, that would be Seattle going out and spending money on, like, Drew Dalman and Mekhi Becton at guard and center, and you bring in two solid veteran pieces to your O-line, and maybe you add a tight end in free agency that you like potentially. And then you go and do the defensive side in this draft class. And you go get, you know, if he's there, a Mike Green, Shamar Stewart, one of these edge guys. And you go get a nose tackle. And you go get your reinforcements to help Mike McDonald's side in the draft. And that's what a lot of this is the Eagles defense is a lot of them building it. Like Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean were there two picks in this last draft class, back-to-back. Both of them had huge plays at different points within the game, whether it was a pass breakup by Mitchell or Cooper DeJean with his pick and returning it for a touchdown. Like, you know, and then you got Jalen Carter in the draft before that. And you just look at a lot of these things the Eagles have done, and it's not like we have a new GM here. That's what I guess is so frustrating for me about it is Howie Roseman and John Schneider have almost been in the NFL for the same length of time. And as GMs in similar roles, and you look at the vast difference in results, Howie Roseman's been able, like you said, to keep the Eagles relevant and playing in NFC championship games. We haven't been able to get by the divisional round since 2014.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Roseman, no GM is perfect and is able to get everything right. But, I mean, the first few years, he only became general manager in 2010. And from 2010 to 2016, they didn't even win a playoff game. And that was kind of their transitional phase because it was clear that the Reed era had run its course. And then they had one good year out of Chip Kelly. And then they gave Chip Kelly GM powers or like roster control. And that was a very bad idea. But they've never really totally bottomed out. And even when they've had bad years, so like 2020, when Wentz was completely cooked and Hurts was a rookie, 4-11 in one season, they're able to get Devontae Smith the next year and have some good draft picks, and they're able to at least make the playoffs the following year. In 2012, I think was their 4-12 year, where it was like Vince Young and Vic and Kevin Cobb or wherever. And then they fired Reed, they hired Chip Kelly, they get some good additions, and suddenly they're a playoff team, they win the division. But they've had busts. They've had, Jalen Reagor over Justin Jefferson.
Yep.
I mean, he's had some misfires, but he's also quick to cut bait. I mean, that Wentz contract is interesting because, I mean, he gave him an extension, but they still drafted Hurts in the second round. And once it was clear that Wentz was basically a net negative for them, time to move on from him and roll with Hurts. So, I mean, Roseman is a really, really good GM, and he has been for a long time. And the roster construction, again, it's only easy for us to say you can just duplicate that, but it's also just the simplicity of best player available. When do you hear about the Eagles, quote, reaching early in the draft for a guy who should be picked in the third or fourth round? Doesn't really happen all that much. They take the best player available who also is a reasonable fit for their needs and fits their roster. They have a clear identity. And then there's also the coaching aspect when you're talking about offensive line. Jeff Stoutland is probably the best hire Chip Kelly's ever made because he has outlasted Kelly's era and when Doug Peterson. So he's been with all three head coaches, and he has just been able to mold the Chiefs, the Eagles offensive line into a consistent winner. Jordan Mailata, spoiler alert, not a first round pick. Cam Jurgens, I think he's a second round pick. I mean, I think the one first round rounder is Lane Johnson, and that was he was a top 10 pick, and he's like a borderline Hall of Fame tackle. But as you said, it's not just resources. There's a coaching aspect of it, and there's also the scouting and development. And I feel like Seattle has fallen short there at that specific position for so long, and it's kind of put them behind the eight ball, as a matter of speaking. But yes, Philadelphia deserved the hell out of the Super Bowl, and they were dominant. I mean, it kind of just snuck up on people. They had some hiccups, but I mean, they started 2-2, and Sirianni was getting, you know, the riot act read after they got crushed by Tampa Bay, and then the bye week happened. They struggle against Cleveland, and then they don't lose again until Jalen Hurts gets concussed. I mean, I think they win that game against Washington in the regular season if Hurts gets to play the full game, but he didn't, and Kenny Pickett played, and that's just a pretty big drop off. But nevertheless, dominant team, second in points allowed, number one by DVOA, you know, if you go by FTN Fantasy's rankings, and their offense wasn't spectacular, but it worked for them. I think they were 11th ranked in terms of DVOA, and that's not particularly high for a Super Bowl winner, but they had their identity. Excellent running game, and it's mostly Saquon Barkley because Gainwell's a replacement-level player. But the passing game, Hurts didn't throw for 3,000 yards. It's kind of unprecedented to have somebody play as many games as he did and not clear 3K. And like I said, Hurts, not a top-five quarterback in the eyes of most people, but on a good day, he can play like a top-five quarterback, and usually he can be in that 7-12 range, and you can win with that. Maybe that's another key lesson. You do not absolutely need the best quarterback or the second best quarterback in the league to win a Super Bowl or even to be a perennial contender. And that's what's, I think, pleases me about the way that Hurts played and the fact that he is a Super Bowl champion now. It's that if you view Hurts as not that great, that doesn't mean move on from him and say, oh, you can't win with him. If you have the pieces around him, he can be a very, very good quarterback, and he's not going to lower your ceiling. And that's, to me, the benefit to somebody like Hurts to the Eagles franchise. I mean, Donovan McNabb was their kind of lightning rod for criticism, but there were times, absolutely, where McNabb just totally gagged it in the playoffs. Hasn't really happened to that same extent with Hurts. But also, those Eagles teams were not as good as this Eagles team, where it's so well-rounded that it's really hard for a quarterback to completely screw it up.
Yeah, and you talk about the identity in the trenches and just how dominant that defensive front was. And you know, you look at how we can take some lessons from there. And you know, we've said this many times, do we believe in our scouting and John Schneider to do that? But I think if we look at Mike McDonald and say, hey, you know, if he can transform this defense into a potential top five, then this offense, you know, we'll get into Geno Smith a little later, but you know, if he's our quarterback and you don't have to be that top five, top 10 offense, that you can win potentially with just, you know, middle of the row offensive statistic team if you have this dominant identity on the defense. But you know, talk about what happened recently or you know, the first restructure with Big Cat there. Talk about that, and also Chenna is up as well. There could be a decision there. Talk about the Big Cat restructure. What you think that means? Is there things to come? Is that gonna, obviously that's gonna free up some money? What do we do there? So why do you think that restructure happened? And what are your thoughts on what they do with Chenna coming up here as well?
Yeah, with Big Cat, we did, I think, the last Pulse of the Hawks, or maybe two before that, we were talking about levers they could pull to open up cap room. And it didn't occur to any of us that they could do this, as far as Williams specifically. But they're still, you know, and they're still in the red. They got to clear up 13 more million, and they got to be well above, you know, just to be cap compliant. They're going to have more cap space for draft picks and practice squad players, all that stuff down the line. But that's not to worry about too far down the road. But I think it's a pretty reasonable move to restructure Williams' cap. And given his age, he's still going to be playing at a high level, but he's also somebody whom 2026 suddenly is a different story for him, as opposed to the even the slightest thought about making him as a trade chip or anything in 2025. He is absolutely undeniably on this roster for at least next season. Nwosu is going to be interesting because I think he's owed like $6 million on Friday or by Friday. I'm leaning toward restructure because I feel like he could still be a valuable piece on this defense. He's just had really bad luck with that injury history. I mean, he didn't have a deep injury history with the Chargers, and then he was totally fine his first year in Seattle. And then his second year, you have the torn pec. And then this last year, you have the dirty hit. The knee injury that he couldn't avoid. And then he had the quad injury was more concerning.
Yeah.
So you could see him sort of get back into a groove when he played against the Bears. Now, Bears offensive line tax fully acknowledged that they can make anybody look like a Hall of Famer. I still think that you can keep Nwosu. If they cut him, I wouldn't be shocked. But I can see them trying to restructure and lower his cap hit too. But it seems to me that they're just trying to make moves to be cap compliant without going to the obvious ones, which means the Geno deal or cut, Lockett restructure or cut, Metcalf restructure or trade because Metcalf isn't getting cut. So they're trying to see what other moves they can make that don't involve, you know, cutting obvious players or cutting like the cheap stuff, like cutting, say, Draymond Jones or cutting Rayshon Jenkins or George Fant, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think this means like some big earth-shattering move is coming, but the next few moves, and we're going to find out pretty soon just what Nwosu this week, the next few moves could go a long way toward determining the free agent space, cap space they have available, and whether they want to make either a splash trade. No, not for Myles Garrett. He's probably not coming here. Just don't go to any other NFC West team, please, Myles. And then, free agency, but yeah, trade and free agency, essentially, if they had that room to make even a mid-level signing. So if it's Drew Dolman, I don't know if Drew Dolman's going to command this humongous contract because centers typically don't. But that could be an example of having enough space to sign him, and he's like your big centerpiece move, as opposed to we have all this cap space to re-sign and restructure and extend guys, but also we're going to do a bunch of one-year, $3 million signings. Like, please don't do that again.
It's interesting, Mookie, because I looked at it when it happened, and my immediate thing was, okay, what's the next lever that's getting pulled because something else is coming? Nothing has as of yet. I wonder if they restructured money that Leonard Williams freed up. I wonder if that's a way for John Schneider to go, okay, our draft compensate, like our draft picks and our, you know, stuff that we're going to have to deal with in post August, there's our money allocated for that. The lever of Draymond Jones and some of these other ones, they're going to free up your free agency space. When we talk about Chenna, I think Chenna does have a role on this team. You know, he's a leader. You can tell that with the guys. He's a leader in that locker room. But I wonder if they do cut him, then I think that shows that Mike McDonald has a lot of faith in Boy Mafe and Leonard Williams to take over as full-time starters and not so much as rotational players, which I don't know if I'm totally on board with yet. But the other part for me is if you keep Chenna, I think you make him more rotational than he is a three-down starter that he kind of had been the first couple of years in Seattle when he was playing and he was healthy. I think you can move him more into a pass rush specialist kind of situation. And maybe that's why in the draft they go after, you know, a potential, you know, blue chip or upper echelon edge player to then come in, and that takes some of that load off of Chenna. And you can really let Chenna be that third down, you know, come off the edge and just go after the quarterback kind of player, which I think is fine for Chenna, and it might lessen the strain on him potentially getting another injury. Because like you said, it's been some pretty significant ones really for the last 2 years. It's nothing like, oh, he sprained an ankle. It's like he tore the pec off the bone, and then he basically almost tore his quad from what it sounds like. So I hope that, you know, they keep Chenna around because I think he still has some good ball in him. I just think it's going to come down to a number situation. But I do think the Draymond Jones lever is coming. And, you know, we know that there's going to be other moves. The one that'll be the next one after Draymond, I think, will be Tyler. I think that decision will come down pretty quick here. But, yeah, no, I think that's kind of where that money from Leonard Williams will go, is to kind of dealing with the stuff post-training camp with your, you know, or post-draft, I should say, with your draft class and paying them and allocating that money there.
Yeah. And another thing to consider with Chenna, he's not old. He's 28. He'll be 29 when the season is almost over. So he should be theoretically in the prime of his career. But if you let go of Chenna, you are almost compelled to sign a pass rusher in free agency, because we're all working on the assumption that Draymond is not staying. He's going to get cut. So you cut two edge rushers because they moved Draymond to edge. He's nominally an edge essentially now. So that leaves you with Hall and Mafe. And then who else as your natural outside linebacker? There's basically not a whole lot there. And I know there's Jamie Sheriff off the practice squad, but again, he signed a futures contract. But let's be real, he's already bounced around a couple of times. And while you don't give up on him and he looked really good in preseason, there are a lot of dudes who look really good in preseason. And then there's the actual game against first stringers that kind of separates the men from the boys, if you will. So edge rusher, and Hot Bloggers mentioned this, and I've backed it up. Edge rusher could be a sneaky need for Seattle.
Yeah.
Because just thinking big picture, all right, you cut Chenna to save cap space. You cut Draymond to save cap space. You got Mafe and Hall. One of those dudes is in a contract here, and the other one is 2 years away. So to me, you can never have enough edge rushers as far as like just having dudes who can get after the quarterback. Chenna as a third down specialist, I think, would be really cool. You know, kind of being what Daryl Taylor should have been. And he can also play the run. Maybe the good news on that front is the fact that the run defense improved enough that Nwosu is not like totally indispensable as far as like, you know, his run defense. Because last year when the run defense went, it coincided with Nwosu being gone. They were other factors too, but Nwosu is like the real only undisputed two-way player on among the outside linebackers. But the run defense improving this past season, even without Chenna, I think was encouraging. But to still have him, I mean, that's another body there. To me, just having all that depth that you can rotate on the defensive line, whether the outside linebackers or the interior defensive line, keeps guys fresh. And you can look at it with the Super Bowl with the Eagles. I mean, they had all those dudes and they still drafted Jalix Hunt. So you look at the Seahawks side, and we can even go back into the good old days. You've got Cliff, you've got Bennett, you've got Bruce, you know, other than the 1 year they made him inside linebacker. And then in the interior, you've got Meebane, you've got Clint McDonald, you had, Tony McDaniel. So you had just constant rotation so that nobody was playing an inordinate number of snaps per game. I think they kind of tried to do that by getting Robertson Harris in the middle of the season. And I think it was beneficial to a degree. But yeah, it'll be fascinating to see what they do with this edge rusher position, because if they lose Chenna, I mean, I think it should be made clear, given, you know, our recent criticisms of Schneider, that extending Chenna was a totally fine move. Totally fine move, and the injuries are bad luck. So if they move on, it's not a case of, oh, it's a bad Schneider contract. It's a case of just, dude got injured in the worst freakish set of ways, even though he didn't have much of an injury history.
Yeah, I think, yeah, and you look, I don't think anyone would argue that. I think it's just a bad luck thing. Like, I think if you look at, say, Jamal Adams, you know, another guy that was injured, but a totally different scenario, right? Just, we can all agree that just, you know, first of all, gave up way too much and then, you know, paid him way too much. So, you know, I think, I really think even if you keep Chenna, like, I agree, like, I think this is a sneaky need and, you know, just want a depth. And I think, you know, there's just, you're still possibly looking for that game wrecker, you know, on the edge. Like, you talk about Mafe and Hall and, you know, what's the ceiling, and you know, you're gonna have to talk extensions soon, especially, you know, Mafe coming up. And, you know, it's a guy where you're like, is that a guy that is gonna warrant big time money? You know, like, that's the thing. There's nowhere in this D line, I think, yet where you're just, you know, this guy is this game wrecker. And I think that, yeah, even though you like what you've seen so far, and last year was a huge improvement, but you know, guys like Derek Hall emerging, but I mean, I don't know, man. I think that is a sneaky need. What other you know, just staying on the, you know, cuts and maybe other guys that you might bring in, depends on the cap. What other free agents that you think might be a need here? Offensive line is the obvious choice. You know, we've talked about it, aren't we? We had a free agent show that we discussed guys, but what's your thoughts as far as maybe the directions John's going to go? Do you think he does address that? You mentioned center before we get into the draft, where it's like, you know, maybe we can get some mid-level guys to, you know, fill at least one guard spot, center spot. Takes a little pressure off in the draft that you don't have to nail a guy to, you know, plug and play. What's your thoughts on that?
I look at free agency for Seattle, and of course I don't know the top free agents off the top of my head. And also we have to acknowledge they're going to be cap casualties for the 31 other teams as well. So the free agent list you're looking at right now, you also have to acknowledge that they're going to be a bunch of dudes who you might not expect to be cap casualties that are going to be cap casualties. Wide receiver is going to be interesting, because if we assume they keep DK, and incidentally, the Chiefs' performance in the Super Bowl, their receivers not getting open is also not having a number one wide receiver or even anything close to that. Rashee Rice, it would probably be that, but like Worthy got a lot of his stats in garbage time, and they just didn't have enough separation with the receiving depth. Receiving depth still matters, even for the best quarterbacks and the best coaches. But if they move on from Lockett, I am not comfortable whatsoever with a Jake Bobo promotion to it's a wide receiver three. Now, still, there's good use for him as a blocker and as a back shoulder fake guy, contested catch guy. He knows how, he's got good hands and all that. But I feel like the depth would be really tested, because then you get to, I don't know, Derek Young and Cody White and guys who are just preseason fodder. And they've done not a whole lot in regular season play to warrant an increase of snaps. But if they see a cheap wide receiver, and Alejandro Castro, my field goals colleague, suggested this, Marquez Valdes-Scantling was kind of like the butt of jokes, especially the famous drop he had last year. But for whatever reason, when he catches a pass, it's going for at least 40 yards. And he was nothing in Buffalo. And then he goes to New Orleans with a certain Clint Kubiak as offensive coordinator. And he's averaging over 20 per reception from what I recall. So he could be like that Marquise Goodwin type of signing. I mean, that's just cheap depth. And certainly he'd be more valuable than Chenault, who just can't run routes at all. And then obviously he's not a great kick returner. So wide receiver, I could see them doing something there. Tight end, I don't think is a huge free agent need. Like if they move on from Farrell Brown, for sure, that like that can't continue. Be interesting to see what happens with Noah Fant. If they keep Fant, then fine. Fant and Barner, Fant gets to run down his contract. If they go into the tight end free agency market, I think that they would be interested, and Kubiak might vouch for it, bringing over Juwan Johnson, because he could basically just be Fant but cheaper, where he's not known or lauded for his blocking, but he can run routes. He's a former wide receiver, and he could be that sort of play-action boot option for Geno and do some different things that Barner might not be as well equipped to do. Another position, linebacker, meaning inside linebacker. So we know that's we got Tyrus Knight, Ernest Jones, you hope to extend. After those two, I mean, the depth is scary, because you're dealing with like not John Rattigan, he's been long gone, but Patrick O'Connell and Drake Thomas, and they might have looked good against third stringers in preseason or against the Miami Dolphins, but that's another position where there's just not great depth there. So I don't want to chance it with just having like preseason level players as backups. Quarterback, we've discussed that to death as far as free agency, and then running back, there's no need to add a running back in free agency, but not a ton of positions really that I can think of where, yeah, Seattle's absolutely got to spend in free agency outside of the offensive line. I don't mind if they dip a little bit more as far as edge rusher or in the interior defensive line, because again, you can never have enough depth there. And there's no guarantee, for example, that they keep Robertson Harris or Jaron Reed. So they're probably not keeping Hankins. So they might have to retool the interior defensive line a little bit more than we think.
Yeah, no, I think Mookie with it all, I think receiver is going to be another need for him. We talked about, you know, linebacker, we've talked about a couple different spots that are going to be sneaky needs, edge being another. I think it'll be interesting to see what Kubiak's philosophy is on the third receiver's role, how is that really more of a tight end in this system? Is it more of a, you know, MVS or, you know, one of the guys like that that you can bring in that's kind of a bargain hunt deal? I know Tyler's going to be out of here, and it worries me with all the talk around DK and whether or not DK is going to be out of here and they're going to trade him or whatever. To all of a sudden have JSN, Bobo, and White be like your three guys in the receiver room, and then you're relying on the draft falling a certain way to get, you know, one of these guys. Now, there's a couple guys in the draft that I'd be interested in. We'll talk about that at another point in another show, but it'll be interesting to see how this all goes. I think for me, the biggest area that I want to see them allocate their free agent money to is the offensive line. Like, stop going with the way you've been doing things, John Schneider. You have to change your stripes to it a little bit of an extent. You may not have to go completely blow it all up because it sounds like there's guys in this room that they think are going to be good. I'm also going to be interested, this is actually a really good segue, to the impact of the assistant coaches that Seattle has brought in. So we know since last time we had you on, there's been some assistant coaches changed. Scott Huff's moved on. Charles London's moved on. And they brought in, you know, John Benton and, I'm trying to figure out how to say his name and I don't want to butcher it. I think it's Janko.
I think it's Janoco. Yeah.
Janoco. Thank you. I feel like John Benton might be one of the best hires Seattle may have made in the last 10 years. Just with his O-line background, 33 years worth of experience in it, I think there's a good chance he can actually develop some of these guys, whether it be LeMay, whether it be Christian Haynes, whether it be Olu Sundell, some of these guys that are in our system already and make them better. And I think with Kubiak, the scheme fit might be better for some of these guys, especially a guy like Christian Haynes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a surprise that they moved on from, it seems like they're moving on for quite a bit of the offensive staff. I mean, obviously Grubb had to go, and then Kubiak seemingly has control or the ability to add some of his guys to his staff, which is totally normal. So Benton has got that familiarity, not just with Clint, but also he was Gary's offensive line coach, I'm pretty sure, for a while in Houston. And he's also had O-line experience with San Francisco. So you have him. Huff is now the tight ends coach for the Rams. So that kind of caught me off guard because I thought for sure that he would have gone to Alabama with Grubb. So this is one of those instances where he's not joined at the hip, which, you know, it's not, I expected Huff to be with Grubb, but Huff was also at UW before Grubb ever got there. So they're not a couple. They're not a package deal all the time, I guess you could say. But as far as the assistant changes, I mean, Charles London ended up going to the Jets to be the quarterback's coach there. So a lateral move. I'm interested to see if Jake Peets is going to stay because he was kind of talked about in this head coaching cycle as a offensive coordinator or passing game coordinator for another team. But I never seen him actually get an interview. Jacksonville ended up going with Udinski as the offensive coordinator to Liam Cohen. So it seems like Peets is going to stay because I haven't heard – I've just heard rumblings. I haven't actually seen any confirmation he's going to leave.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing, Mookie, through different people, that it sounds like Peets is going to stay because he has familiarity with this system. Like, this is kind of what, in some respects, he grew up in with McVay and that group. So I think the plan is he's going to stay on as passing coordinator along with the receiver coach, just so there's some familiarity there with the players that are currently in-house. You're not redoing. And I think part of it is, too, the passing game wasn't really the issue last year. That was a big part of it. Like, yes, okay, we wish there was a couple more things with quick game and play action. But the actual, passing game itself wasn't horrible. Mm-hmm. And so you can keep that and carry that over. You need to marry it with a better play caller and a better schemer, which I think you get in Clint Kubiak and someone that can also design a functioning run game.
Yeah, 100%. But Benton is the story here. I mean, they've had a carousel of coaches at the quarterback's coach position. So Canales was briefly the coach, quarterback's coach, and then I think then he wasn't, and then he was again after I think Austin Davis left. And then Canales takes a head coaching job or coordinator job in Tampa Bay before becoming the coach of Carolina. And then Greg Olson is the quarterback's coach, and then almost everybody from Pete's staff got let go. And then you bring in Charles London, who has had very little experience as an actual quarterback's coach. I think he's been more of a receiver's coach over the years. And we can't, go deep into the weeds of whether or not he did a great job with the quarterback's room or whatever. But obviously, Seattle wasn't totally satisfied and let him seek employment elsewhere. He was soft fired, as far as I'm concerned. But Benton has that experience. And the other bit is that he has a clear identity. And we know what type of blocking scheme that Benton desires because, I mean, he's joined at the hip with Kubiak. So we know that there isn't going to be just mishmash. Whereas with Scott Huff, having no prior NFL experience meant it was kind of harder to gauge who would be a Huff guy for the NFL compared to a Scott Huff recruit at the University of Washington. So it's a good thing that you mentioned all the young players who are already on the team. Because, yes, I would like them to continue to invest in the offensive line through the draft, create more competition. But we saw some good stuff from Omea. We saw some really good stuff, actually, at times from Sundell. Oluwatimi at least was a functional center. I don't feel like he's got the great speed at the position or the high-end athleticism, really, to hang around at a high level. But I could be wrong on that front. And then Tomlinson, I don't totally rule out Tomlinson staying because he's got ties to Benton with the Jets, but I would rather they move on and give Haynes a shot. But with a new, more experienced coach who knows the NFL inside and out, that could be kind of the second lease on life for Haynes in particular. But even in free agency, it should be very targeted as to who they want based on the scheme fits with Kubiak and Benton. Like the Connor Williams thing last year, it was well-intended. But if Huff was going to run shotgun 80% of the time, Williams was a terrible signing, knowing his history with bad shotgun snaps. So to me, that's where there's a disconnect between management and then, between Schneider, essentially, and what Huff wants in his system. Because the tape is there. We have television and we have computers. We can see that he's had a huge problem with this over the years. And obviously, they had to move on. So, Benton hopefully can be a stabilizer in a way. And we've had experienced offensive line coaches before, Cable being one of them. We've had Mike Solari. We've had Alex Gibbs for a year, and then he left abruptly. And we've had mixed results at best, but I feel like offensive line and offensive coordinator are probably the two major sides of that ball, major coaches on that side of the football where you go, you can't have like very, very inexperienced people in charge of the whole operation, especially if you're a team that's looking to contend. I think that's where you need a voice who knows the ins and outs of the league and which guys he wants. And he knows the players both on the college system and also in free agency in general who would best suit his offense.
Yeah. Hey guys, get your questions into Mookie. Love the comments flowing in, but any questions, fire them in there for Mookie. That's why, we're here every second week, Pulse of the Hawks. So, because we're going to get to Q&As as well coming up in the latter half of the show too. So get them in there and we'll try to get to a few of those as well. But yeah, I mean, Mookie, that's the thing I want to see, man. Like when free agency starts kicking off, I want to see like it's Christmas and day one, you're hearing about an offensive lineman being signed, not the end of free agency where you're picking up the bargain basement deals. Like you said, the $1 million guys, the vet mins and hope this will work, right? Connor Williams, everything's got to work, but then the philosophy is completely different. So, we'll see, but that's the one thing I just want to sort of like, let's get this out of the way. It's they have to have, that's the conversation's got to be happening right now with Kubiak and this has got to be a priority, right? We have to get somebody in, get a good veteran in. And then, like you said, I'm all for keep adding to the depth with young talent, but they don't necessarily have to be thrown in the fire right away. Like we saw last season, you saw some good things, right? With the Sundell, Jarrell had his moments at the beginning. Like, okay, these are all sort of potential, work in progress guys. You talk about Haynes, but, so that'll be interesting to see. Obviously, things have to fall in place with our cap, but, I think that it's a telltale sign of how this offseason will go with Schneider. If we don't hear anything the first day, like it could be, maybe it's just business as usual. How do you think Schneider's going to approach it? What are you leaning towards? You leaning towards that? Like, obviously, they know that it's something they have to address. But what do you think? Like, you think Mike's going to have a little more, you know, influence on him? And now with Kubiak, and hey, maybe my seat's getting a little hot. Do you see him leaning towards maybe not like a huge splash, but we got to address this a little more aggressively than what I've done in the past?
Yeah, he'll take a cautious but necessary step, I believe. Doesn't mean go and try and spend $20 million a year on Trey Smith, whom, by the way, looked exactly like a Seahawks offensive lineman, but I don't mean that in a complimentary way at all. But the way that he was dealing with Carter and anybody else on opposite him on the Eagles. But
right.
Like I said, Dahlman looks like a good fit. Somebody in, if you're paying $9, $10 million a year like the Commanders did with Tyler Biotish, I'm totally fine with that. We've seen Schneider do this with other positions, like the Nwosu deal, the original one, not the one that he got through his extension. Very, very sensible contract. The Cliff Avril contract and the Michael Bennett contracts were very, very sensible. And they were known commodities too. Like, Avril was quite productive in Detroit, and he got like a semi-prove it deal, but it was still a bargain to have him on the team. And then Julian Love, like, that was ended up being a very good signing, a good frugal signing, without it being like a dirt cheap sort of thing. So you would think that logically you'd be able to translate this to the offensive line, but it's happened so infrequently that, like, DJ Fluker is one of those best free agent signings the Seahawks have ever had on the offensive line, because they actually extended him for a bit. But Gabe Jackson, I guess, would be his other notable big-ish move. But they traded for Jackson. They gave up a fourth. He was already on the other side of 30, and it turns out he had one good year in him. So I would like them to find younger talent. But that also doesn't mean don't give up on the younger talent that you just drafted or, in Sundell's case, signed through free agency, because you do want to think about succession plans. The fact that they had Damian Lewis, didn't re-sign him, and that he had nothing at left guard, I mean, that's troubling. Whereas look at the Eagles. Kelsey eventually retires. They drafted his replacement. They got Cam Jurgens, and he's looking like a perfect natural successor. So we have seen over the years Seattle not re-sign their own guys and then not have a proper backup plan. So nothing is more obvious than the Max Unger, and I think I brought this up on Fridays, the Max Unger trade for Jimmy Graham. Is like, okay, fine. You're going to let go of Unger. Who's your back? Who's your next plan? Who's your successor to Unger at center? And they go with Drew Nowak, who was so bad that they cut him in the middle of the season. They had to play Patrick Lewis the rest of the way. Bad management. Like, you can't trade away one of your few Pro Bowl offensive linemen ever and then do that. Even the Russell Okung thing. They let Okung walk. All right, fine. Who's the replacement? George Mann wasn't the replacement. That just happened by accident. They signed Bradley Saul for dirt cheap money, and he was ruinous. He pretty much got Wilson hurt. I mean, within the first few weeks of the season. So if you sign a veteran for a year or two and they're so good that you want to extend them, fine. But if you sign somebody who's like on a one-year deal and is functional but might be out of your price range, still keep a couple of those guys in your reserves, because that development can be key. And I would just like to see Seattle be able to develop their guys and keep them. Too often, they're better offensive linemen get developed and then they don't get kept. Or they get cut early like Glowinski, who was genuinely bad. But then he goes to the Colts and he ends up being a functional starter because he did get developmental time there.
Yeah, that's going to be the biggest thing I think we'll have to see with this new offensive staff, especially, is what does the development plan look like? Can they, you know, make Christian Haynes, who, you know, you look at back at all the scouting reports for Christian Haynes last offseason, he was supposed to be the best pure guard in the draft. And then we see him and he gets beat up by a 6th round pick. And then you listen to Mike McDonald, which we're going to kind of touch on here a little bit in this next little segment, and his recent interview with Aaron Levine. It sounds like, you know, Christian Haynes is, you know, someone that he expects is going to be really good in this league. He's going to, you know, become a phenomenal player for the Seahawks. And say, like, okay, well, I get there's coach talk and I get there's, hey, we want to make sure we're pumping everybody up. But the way with Mike McDonald, the one thing I've learned with him is, his body language and his pitch of voice change usually tell you exactly how he's honestly feeling, where Pete was pretty good at kind of messing with you with that. Mike McDonald's very still much learning how to not give things away. And it sounds like they're very excited about the guys they do have. So I'm interested to see, you know, with John Benton coming in? Does he look and go, yeah, Christian Haynes is going to work. Christian Haynes, I can work with, and I can do this and this and this. And, you know, he even brought up out of the blue in that interview, Jalen Sundell. Like, they talked about Olu, and then he even brought up Sundell, and he goes, yeah, you know, Sundell, he did a lot of good things this year and was really amped up about Sundell. So it makes me okay. Like, again, I hope that's not it. You're not just going to roll back this line again. You need to add to it. You need to do the things that teams that are successful in playing in NFC championship games do, which is build from the trenches out, not the other way around. We saw what happened when our trenches deteriorated out of the LOB in that era and how much worse things got. And we were kind of just kidding ourselves of actually being a contender at points. Let's go back to being a contender. Let's go back to being bully ball and making teams regret that they have to play the Seahawks on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And that's going to be where I think you see the most success, married with what Clint Kubiak can do as a play caller.
Oh yeah, totally. So what you're saying with McDonald is vocalics for him. If you look at nonverbal communication, because vocalics, even though it sounds like a misnomer, vocalics is a part of nonverbal communication. It's not how you said it, or it's the way you said it. Or it's,
yeah,
you get what I'm saying.
Yep.
So with Pete, it's more of the code words that he tends to use.
Yep.
If somebody's seriously injured, legit, if somebody didn't actually play all that well, they did fine. So yep. That normally means they're about to get cut pretty soon.
Yep, exactly.
Christian Michael did fine in one of those games or something like that. He got cut like 2 weeks later. Yep. So with Carroll, we were able to quickly pick up on Pete's speak, but we're still working on Mike's speak outside of, you know, X played their tails off.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, speaking of Mike and talking about Aaron Levine, I know we'll touch on this because he obviously asked him about Geno Smith and said, hey, you know, what's pretty much his future. And now, you know, Mike's not the GM, but, you know, talking to Bryce's point about, you know, the way it comes across and the way it was presented, you know, he almost had a bit of a laugh, like, you know, what are you talking about? Let's kill this talk. You know, I love Geno Smith. We love Geno Smith. He's our quarterback. We can get to a Super Bowl with him. You know, what do you take out of that? Is that to you, is that more than coach talk? Is that genuine? Because then, you know, like Bryce was mentioning, you know, we did go on to talk about the offensive line and how he's stoked for his guys. And, you know, of course, you're going to say certain things as a coach, but then, yeah, there's certain things that you mean. And then there's the other side of, well, John Schneider's, we haven't heard from John yet, right? But what do you take out of the interview, at least from Mike, how genuine that was, what that means for Geno's future? Did you take anything out of that, or did you just think, oh, that's just coach talk? What did you ultimately think of that that recent interview there with Mike?
So there may be a little bit of politicking at play whenever a coach is asked about the quarterback with an uncertain future, but that felt like the most direct answer I can recall McDonald ever giving regarding Geno, because remember last year when he wasn't, but like a few weeks into his job, when they asked him about Geno and his future, both him and Schneider were like, they didn't sound 100% fully committed like Geno's our quarterback. And then after the combine went, and then after they traded for Howell and Schneider made it clear Howell's going to be Geno's backup, that's when it was the realization, like, okay, Geno's here to stay, at least for this season. But McDonald said it in such a dismissive way of dismissive of the question, not, you know, in a different manner. But to me, I think that there's been a lot of reporting for Corbin Smith as far as the and Michael Sean Dugar at the Athletic as far as the internal perception of Geno, meaning the Seahawks organization, and then the fan perception of Geno, and that they're pretty much not on the same wavelengths, and that the internals on Geno are a lot higher than the fan perception. And it would probably match up, because if they were soured on him, they probably would have gotten rid of him last year. But with that said, if they keep Geno, that does not mean it does not preclude them from drafting a quarterback anyway in the second or third round. I mean, we just watched a team win the Super Bowl, extend Wentz, and then draft Hurts like a year after they extended Wentz's deal. So we've seen this before, but just isolating it to Smith, I don't think there's going to be a big trade market for him. I do think that if they restructure, it's going to lower the cap hit significantly. It'll be like a three-year deal that's kind of a two-year deal. And there would be outs to that contract. So they can have that succession plan. And we just talked about succession plans at offensive line and their steadfast refusal to do anything about that. Well, this would be a pretty damn good time to do one for Geno. And again, if they decide to take a flyer on a fifth-round quarterback, that's too low. That's such low draft capital that if the fifth-round pick ain't any good, go get another one in 2026. So, I mean, that's what you can do as far as just managing your quarterback room. So I think I'm leaning toward Geno staying. I was 50-50 on this like a few segments ago, meaning a few Pulse of the Hawks episodes ago. But now I'm kind of like 65-35 that Geno will stay and that Schneider is of the opinion that this team can contend. Now, as far as the line about, I believe that we can win a championship with Geno Smith. I know that he's going to get laughed at. And I didn't even bother to read any of the replies on social media to that particular quote. But it would sound ludicrous if Seattle was in the AFC, because it's just been Mahomes forever. The NFC, even with Philadelphia's success and the fact that Hurts has gotten to the Super Bowl twice, mm-hmm. just within this division, the Rams have made the Super Bowl with Stafford and Goff. The Niners have made the Super Bowl with Garoppolo and Purdy. We have had just a revolving door. Nobody's been able to just grab that mantelpiece, and nobody's been able to just grab the baton and run away with it. Nobody's been able to make like 5-6 straight conference championship games on the NFC side the way that the Chiefs can make it all the time, or the Patriots before them. It's kind of like the same 3, 4, 5 teams always in the mix in the AFC, but the NFC is totally different. I mean, Goff almost made a second Super Bowl with Detroit. Almost did. Jaden Daniels got to make it in his first year. That doesn't guarantee he's going to be back in the Super Bowl next year, but there's right. much greater turnover in the NFC. And there are also, I would say, not to slight Geno and make this sound like a backhanded compliment, but there have been non-elite quarterbacks getting into the Super Bowl through the NFC time and time again, Goff being one of them. I would consider Stafford at his best an elite quarterback, but still, he went from zero playoff wins lifetime in Detroit to you put him on the Rams, you put a loaded team in front of him, and he gets to win 3 playoff games and win the Super Bowl. So it is possible to make a run with Geno. I want to make it clear, if you're looking for dynasties, if you're looking for a dynastic run, if you're looking for perennial contention with Geno Smith, his age makes it a non-starter. It is not going to happen, and that is, to me, why I can understand the idea of wanting to move on from Geno ASAP, because as fans, we want to be Kansas City. We want to be hated. We want to have that dynastic run where we're always in the Super Bowl. We're always competing in the conference championship. Geno is not giving you that because he's 34 years old. It is almost functionally impossible for that to happen. But if you want to make a run now, then you might as well try and maximize that window. And I think you can at least make a playoff run with Geno Smith, much in the way that, you know, Jared Goff just made a playoff run a couple of years ago, or Brock Purdy's made a couple of runs already, or Garoppolo. And Garoppolo's kind of a punchline at this point, but they did make the Super Bowl with him, even if Kyle Shanahan just was scared to death of him actually passing the ball in the playoffs. But whatever the case, there is a path to contention in the NFC just through the competitive nature of it, just the total parity in that conference. So it's not that laughable to me.
Yeah, when I heard the Mike McDonald interview piece and just the way he started it with the heck yeah, man, Geno's our guy, you know, and like, I don't understand this conversation. And he basically almost rolled his eyes, like being like, you don't get it. Like, why are we even talking about this? I get the feeling too, Mookie, that they're going to do some sort of extension to lower the cap hit. And I expect it also to be something where they lower it and then it's very incentive-based again, playoff wins, whatever, to get him to a certain number that he wants, whether that's, hey, cool, you're going to get max it out at $38 million a year. You're not going to be in that 40 range, but it's 38, and your base will be 27, but you hit this incentive and this incentive and this incentive and this incentive and it gets you all the way up to whatever. I do think, and just talking to people that I know that are connected, that Seattle most likely was, this will be the first time they've felt in a long time Seattle's taking a quarterback this year in the draft in between rounds 2 and 4, not 6 and throwing one down. Like they're very interested in some of these guys because they see it as a better fit at sit and develop, where they can get a Will Howard, a Quinn Ewers. I know that scares people. Kyle McCord, Jackson Dart potentially, if he, you know, somehow isn't the hype that everyone thinks he is and is going to end up in the first round, there's a chance they're going to take one of these guys. And I think that's where it'll be interesting to see, based on how they deal with things in free agency, how that lines up for them draft class wise and where they're able to take the guy they want to take. Because I think it's more of a question on who's going to come in here this offseason and take Sam Howell's job than it is on who's taking Geno's job. Because I think, and from what I've heard, there's mixed reviews in that building about Sam Howell and what they thought they were getting to what they saw and what they did, you know, from practices and training camp and the little bit he did play, which he kind of got thrown to the wolves in that Green Bay game. I think they realized that, okay, cool, we threw a fourth round pick at it. It didn't work. Let's go get someone else in this draft class that we think is going to be a better potential prospect in the long run. And I know that they're also quite enamored with Jaren Hall, who they got from Minnesota. And there's a reason they kept him around all year round. It wasn't just, oh, we're keeping a quarterback on the practice squad. Like, they actually do like him. So it'll be interesting to see. But I think it's the same thing. Geno's going to get 2 years added on with a out of every year, essentially, for Seattle, where they can go, okay, cool, we found our guy. Goodbye, Geno. And we're moving in a new direction. That's how they're going to structure this going forward. And again, Geno doesn't have a great market. Everyone wants to talk about the Raiders. I don't think the Raiders, I think Tom Brady and the GM there have more say than Pete used to in his role in Seattle, where he had more say in what went on. I think it's going to be more Brady's decision on who that next quarterback is in Vegas.
And you don't also rule out the possibility that, say, Shedeur Sanders gets drafted by the Raiders, or they take a quarterback early anyway, whether they get somebody like Sam Darnold in free agency. Say the Vikings don't franchise him, don't renew him in any capacity, Sam could end up being a Raiders quarterback. And that would be one area where Pete might be interested, because we know Pete was a fan of Darnold dating back to when Darnold played at USC. But it's not like there are plentiful options on the quarterback market for the Seahawks right now that would be even at the same, are likely to be rather, at the same level of the best version of Geno Smith. So Darnold is obviously the biggest name out there. But again, even with the ugly end to a season, I think the Vikings may still be inclined to try and keep him. And just, here's your very expensive one-year prove-it deal, because McCarthy just had two surgeries and he may still need time to sit and develop and all that. But outside of him, Aaron Rodgers is probably going to get released. Under no circumstances do I want Aaron within 10 miles of Lumen Field. So that's a total non-starter. Who else? Zach Wilson has not shown a whole lot in the NFL. I know there's the Jets tax there and the fact that the Jets are just a total clown show, but it feels like he might have been a product of the MTC COVID season. So I don't really see it with Zach Wilson. And then you get just a bunch of veterans. I'm sure Minshew will get cut by the Raiders. Minshew, again, he is a backup level quarterback who's not really much of a starter. So for 2025 and looking through the prism of 2025, your best bet is Geno. But when you're looking at 2025 beyond that, then you're looking at, can you take a flyer on a quarterback in the draft? And I feel like Rob Staten had mentioned this, or somebody who's follows the Seahawks closely, that there is this kind of middle class of quarterback where you're not looking at a bunch of future. This is not going to be 1984 draft class or even the 2020 draft class in terms of great talent up and down. But there seem to be enough quarterbacks who can be taken in the middle rounds who you go, hey, there's no great risk if we take such and such in the third or fourth round. In other words, it's not like even last year we had six quarterbacks taken in the first round and then Rattler gets taken in the fifth and he's the next quarterback after Bo Nix. So it's not like a super top heavy. It's kind of spread out. It is not deep in terms of future all pro talent or projected all pro talent, but it is deep in the terms of numbers.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think, you know, we talked about that on our on a couple of shows and Mock Draft said that, yeah, there's a lot of value, I think, in the later rounds. So I think, you know, maybe we'll get some of the comments here. Thomas comes in here and basically reiterating what, you know, we've been talking about. I think Geno will be back, but at a price. And then I also believe, you know, we'll draft a quarterback either, you know, and here's, he mentioned some guys, either Dart, Howard, McCord, or, you know, Quinn Ewers, right? The John Schneider ties. And I hope they fix the line of scrimmage with smart picks. So, you know, kind of what we've been talking about. I think it's just, it's like the perfect storm for Geno in a way to say, hey, you know, I'm going to be around a couple of years because there's just no other options. You know, I think I take away from Mike where it's like, yeah, we believe in him, but also, yeah, like we've been saying, like, what are the other options? And Mike wants to compete this year. So I think it's like, yeah, he's a good quarterback, but he's probably thinking, man, what else is out there for us right now if we want to compete right now? So, you know, I took away from it like a little coach talk, but also like, you know what? I got to believe in this guy. I got to get behind this guy because at right now, you just talked about the free agents. Like, man, it is pretty hurting, right? I mean, you're taking stabs. You're taking some stabs. Like, if you're like, hey, Zach Wilson, maybe, you know, a couple other guys, right? I don't know, Justin Fields, like, who's out there, right? Hobble Kirk Cousins, you know, so, oh, man. And I agree. I think Minnesota's probably, like, they're in the same boat, really. Like, we had such a good regular season. We're going to just let this guy walk. And then, you know, a guy who's coming off, you know, a pretty big surgery, he's unknown. He's a rookie. So, you know, it's pretty bare. So yeah, man. And then, what do we got here? Brendan Myers comes in with another one. Doesn't care. Kind of makes a dart reference. I don't care where they take a QB in the draft. So it's kind of like, I think that a lot of people are kind of on that same, you know, same trend. Like, okay, sign them, but go draft a QB. Is that kind of your takeaway? Like, okay, I'm cool with it. I think we can compete with them, but you just got to take them. Bryce said, you know, he's talked to a lot of people that it seems like it's pretty clear cut. They want to take one, but is that kind of what you're thinking too? Like, would you be super shocked if they didn't take a guy in the draft?
I would, because it's like, if not now, when? Like, right. You can't keep pushing this down the line. And the fact that they didn't even do this with they did the same thing when Russ was here, other than a seventh round flyer on Magoo, which is the same thing as not really taking much of a flyer at all. I mean, USFL MVP, Alex Magoo, of course. I mean, more MVP votes than Russ. But they had all those years where they could have looked at drafting a quarterback, especially when there were kind of more contentious talks as far as an extension in 2019, and they didn't do it. They had a clear distinction, no succession plan for Russ, even with all the reports that, hey, we almost traded Russell Wilson. Not only did they keep him, they didn't draft any quarterbacks other than Magoo. They had Brett Hundley and Austin Davis and just total, you know, Trevon Boykin as the backup quarterback. So nobody who could challenge Russ anytime soon or be a potential franchise quarterback. So just having a somebody with promise, it feels like it's about time. 2 in 15 years is pretty ridiculous. I mean, you hit one hell of a home run with the one you did draft, but the other one was just forgettable. And I know I didn't mention Justin Fields. It's because I expect him to be re-signed by Pittsburgh. Recent headlines suggest that Russell Wilson and the Steelers is not going to be happening for a second season, but I'd be hesitant with Fields anyway, just because of the ridiculous sack rate that he has. But still, I don't really include him. And then the other options, like after Darnold and Wilson, I know there was an absolutely massive Trey Lance fan in the chat not too long ago, but sorry, I know he's 25, but like, this dude is very, very clearly not a good NFL quarterback. And then you get vets like Brissett and Mariota, Drew Lock of free agents again, if anybody's interested. Jared Stidham, Flacco, Wentz, Mac Jones, Garoppolo's 34 years old, so forget him. Those are dire options, and they're not going to be a lot of quarterbacks other than Rodgers, whom I just mentioned, who are going to be available as cap casualties.
Imagine Aaron in a Seahawks uni. Oh, God.
I mean, he could hang out in his dark place somewhere in Southern Oregon if he wants. It's a much shorter trip.
Yeah, that's true. Another one for Mookie or Bryce. Because we talked about this, man. Who are the top free agent guards? Who are your top guards and draft prospects? Do you have a draft crush, Bryce? You got a draft crush at
draft crush for me. Membo's one from Missouri. Gray Zabel is another one. Everyone's kind of fallen in love with Gray Zabel. I do like Ezra out of Minnesota. He's an interesting guy to me, even though he's more of a tackle. God, I'm trying to think of guards in here. Kelvin Banks is another one. And then I think my other big crush that, like, I would love to see Seattle take just for the flexibility is Donovan Jackson out of Ohio State. Like, if Donovan Jackson's there and Seattle's already, you know, if he's somehow there in round two, I don't know if that even be possible, but if he's somehow there, I am running to that podium through everyone to get that ticket on the table to take Donovan Jackson.
Yeah, that's my number one, even over Booker, because of the flexibility too. I mean, what he did at left tackle after the starter got hurt. I just remember the Penn State game. I mean, you got to deal with Abdul Carter, right? And then he might be the number one overall pick in the draft. And Jackson has been fantastic, whether at tackle or guard. So I like that positional flexibility, especially keeping in mind we don't know Charles Cross's future. I get the sense that he's going to be extended, but that's going to be something that we can talk about more deeply down the line. Free agency, it's not a great free agent class for guards. I mean, you think about Trey Smith as the number one, but Zach Martin is 35 years old. Brandon Scherff is 34. Zeitler's going to be, what, 34 or 30, 35 years old. It would be very Seattle if Zeitler, who looked very good in Detroit, looks completely spent in Seattle. I'm just wary of guards that deep into their career or any offensive lineman, really. Ben Bredesen from Tampa Bay, and I think he's probably my top free agent option, realistically, because I don't think they'll go for Trey Smith. And the reason why I go with Bredesen is he was signed on a cheap deal by Tampa Bay, and he's part of an excellent offensive line that helped Baker Mayfield produce I think he led the league in touchdowns or was close to it. And Bucky Irving had an excellent year as a rookie. He was the best rookie running back by far, and Bredesen was a part of it. Now, getting to play on an offensive line that has Tristan Wirfs on it, that's worth considering as far as the cascading effect with everybody else on that line. But still, I'm pretty sure that my top draft crushes is still Donovan Jackson. I like Membu as well. But free agency, I don't think they're going to spend hugely at guard. Center might be the area where there might be some competition for Oluwatimi. And Becton, yes, somebody mentioned Mekhi Becton, Brandon Myers. It just totally slipped my mind that of course Becton's a free agent.
Mm-hmm.
Right this way, sir. I mean,
yeah. We talked about him on one of the shows too. I mean, yeah, that'd be a nice piece. Here's a Raider thing. You know, there's gonna be those that you gotta have those Pete ties, and maybe he comes over there. But do you think there's a line in the sand where it's like the Seahawks have a number with the restructure? Do you think it could come down to that where, you know, Geno's like, no, this is the market, and I'm not doing any restructure or, you know, whatever you want to call it, discount. I can go get money somewhere else. You know, I only have X amount of years, and we don't think there's a market, but there's always teams in need of QB. Like, we talked about how weak this free agent class is, and there are teams that need that quarterback. And I'm not suggesting that. You know, that he's not going to be here. But if it comes down to those talks, do you think there is that line that Seattle's just not going to cross, and they'd be saying, well, you know, this is just because, you know, you look at last year. I mean, they wanted to get Geno and his camp wanted to get a deal done last year, right? So, and Seahawks weren't really interested. So where do you look at that? Like, you know, Mike McDonald again could sit here and say, yeah, we love him, he's our quarterback, which is, it all could be true. Mike might want to back, but he's not in those negotiations. What do you think of that as far as the Hawks, you know, saying, no, this is the line, we're not moving past it? Or you think they will get flexible? Where do you stand with that?
Well, so far there's nothing to suggest that Geno or his agents are especially difficult in the negotiating process. The fact that he even signed the previous deal in the first place is encouraging. But I'm just pulling up the over the cap table. So the obvious no-goes are really expensive contracts like Prescott's. I mean, Dax is just stupid. But you got Burrow and Love and Lawrence. So there's a mixture of proven quarterbacks and young quarterbacks who have shown promise and are getting the market value. And then after you have the other top names like Lamar and Hurts and Kyler, you get the Deshaun Watson albatross contract. And then you get the Kirk Cousins deal, which is $45 million a year. If you just go strictly by average per year, I think that the line is Kirk. you know, 45 million. I don't think they're going to give that to Geno, but you get to 40 million. That's Stafford's current deal, and he's 37. He might be close to retirement. And even if he isn't retired, doesn't seem like he's a total lock to stay with the Rams. And then below Stafford, you have Rodgers at 37.5 million. And there's an obvious reason why he's getting paid that money. And I think he even took a pay cut, essentially, to get that low. And then there's Derek Carr, 37.5 million. So maybe in the range of 37 to 41 or 42 million. So he would still be like outside the top 10. So that's probably the cutoff. But if it's 45 million and anywhere near that, or he wants to be paid in Jalen Hurts territory or Lamar Jackson territory, that ain't happening. I don't think that they're going to negotiate that way. And I also don't think they have the leverage to negotiate that way, because if the Seahawks say no, I imagine there are a lot of other teams that are not going to say yes to paying Geno some really mega contract.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting to be seen. Another awesome conversation, man. Bi-weekly conversation again. Pulse of the Hawks, guys. All the comments flooding in. It's been awesome, man. It's gonna be interesting. We're just getting rolling because we're officially the offseason starting today for everybody, right? With Super Bowl's done. Eagles, you know, they're the champs now, and just a standard of the NFC that you know, it's you know, take some notes and just let's build from the trenches, man. It's just, I want to see a different philosophy. So it's going to be a really interesting off season, you know, from here on out, see what Seattle really does and the moves they make. It's exciting, man. I'm looking forward to it. You say it every year, right? Like the draft, everything, right? We got the combine coming up soon. We're going to get a look at some guys. That's going to be awesome too. So, you guys, any closing thoughts, Bryce?
Honestly, you know what? I'm hoping this off season's different. I think we are going to find out pretty quick if it's going to be any different than it's been in the past. And I think that's going to set the course. Like, has Seattle learned anything? And truly, with Mike McDonald now here as our head coach, are things really going to be different in the direction that this organization goes? Or is it truly still going to be captained by John Schneider? And if it is, and hopefully he does change it, but if not, we may be heading for an iceberg.
Yeah, no. Mookie, any closing thoughts before we get out of here?
Yeah, the Titanic music. The theme from Titanic is not going to be playing as the outro to this episode, but
hopefully not.
As far as Schneider's future, again, I think that Schneider's future is directly tied to how he performs this offseason, and then the results on the field will bear itself out. If this is the same offseason as all the others, and then you end up with subpar results, then Schneider is gone, and then we're going to have to see about McDonald, because normally the GM doesn't get fired and then the coach stays. But if something is different and they are still pushing to contend and they do want to maximize the window while they still have Geno, then they got to make moves to act like they're going to be real contenders. So no bargain basement hunting, like actually spend the money and be targeted and have a proper plan as to which areas you need to improve. But I also think that this is going to be a great learning of a great understanding, rather, of McDonald as a more involved head coach, because last year was kind of a mishmash sort of thing where he was one of the last people hired to assemble his coaching staff on the fly over the span of a few weeks. You notice, I don't think he was at the Senior Bowl last year, right? But he was this year. So yeah, he's going through the first real proper offseason as a head coach, and we'll get to learn more about McDonald, and we're going to be keeping an eye on his interviews as far as his lingo and his vocal raises and his vocal tremors and how he responds to questions. But it's peak optimism season, I guess, except if you're a Dallas Cowboys fan. Peak optimism off season.
Oh, man.
For 30 other teams in the NFL, or 31 teams in the NFL that everybody thinks they're going to make a run. They just need to tweak a few things here and there. But look, last season didn't end the way we wanted it to. But as I said in an op-ed, they were encouragingly mediocre. They were mediocre in ways that they weren't in years past. In other words, they got better at things that we wanted them to get better at, and they got unexpectedly worse at things we wanted them to either stay good at or also get better at. So if you got great grades in math and bad grades in English, and then suddenly you got great grades in English and bad grades in math, you're still an average C student. So it's just a matter of taking a different path to the same outcome. So, yeah, I'm excited to see what happens. This is going to be a very – normally February is the dead month, but right. with all the restructuring and extension talk for us, Seattle is probably going to be one of the few teams where they're going to be very much in the conversation in terms of what they do over the next few weeks. And we got to watch our rivals too because, you know, we're talking about DK. Well, I think DK is going to stay, but Cooper Kupp and Deebo Samuel might be headed elsewhere.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Hey, Mookie, real quick, what do you guys got coming up on field goals?
Well, there's a cool game that is normally on SBNation.com at a national level, but it's not like Wordle, but it is kind of a trivia game. So it's it's field goals in five. So clue one, for example, I'll give away today's. Clue one, defensive back. Second clue, drafted in the 2010s. I think I wrote 2010s and not 2010 specifically. Clue number three, four-time Pro Bowl selection. Clue number four, can't remember clue number four off the top of my head, even though I wrote it. But then clue number five is Bam Bam. So if you don't have it within five clues, I don't know what to tell you. But you can see if you can get it in one shot or you need all five. It's kind of like the old game Password. So it's really fun. And we've just launched it on Monday. So you're going to be seeing that on a daily basis. And I'll be curating the clues. And you'll get to really test your Seahawks knowledge because I'm not including just your familiar names, whether it's Cam or Sherm or Marshawn or Wilson. There are going to be some dudes you got to reach deep into the depths of your Seahawks history from 70s all the way till now to find out who are these guys. So, yeah, keep on the lookout for that. And in terms of actual content, Alexandre has been doing a great job. He just had an interview with Jackson Slater, who was one of the Senior Bowl standouts. You can check that out on Field Goals. And we're going to be doing some combine preview stuff for sure over the next couple of weeks because we got to pick in every round this year. So the whole draft is open for us unless they make some trade.
Yeah, awesome stuff. Guys, again, go over there, check out the stuff, and make sure you sub to our channel as well, Hawks on Rundown. Man, we guys appreciate the support. We got some cool stuff coming up. We got Curtis Allen coming up Wednesday, so that show will be dropping later in the week. Look out for that. A lot of cap stuff, so tune in. Guys, we appreciate it. Awesome conversation. Catch you guys on the next one. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.